Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Happy birthday, we must say, to Abraham Lincoln. On this day 200 years ago, he was born in Springfield, Illinois. And also happy birthday to Darwin. Quite a day, huh, in history. That's a good idea to read the Gettysburg Address tonight. I'll have my family sit down and we will do just that. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about Afghanistan. As you know, in the news yesterday from Kabul, insurgents attacked three government offices, killing 26 people, wounding 60 people. It was a daring assault and it was the most daring to take place in the capital since 2001. We have two guests with us this hour. Special Representative Richard Holbrooke is going to be arriving today in Afghanistan. We're going to have some kind of announcement within, I believe, the next couple days as to what our troop strength will be in Afghanistan in the year ahead. And we have two guests with us this hour to talk about what the strategy should be and what's going wrong in Afghanistan. Professor Thomas Goodyear is with us, a Dean of International Studies and Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. He was quoted in the New York Times yesterday saying if the insurgents can continually strike at the heart of the heavily fortified capital, it undermines Washington's faith in the Afghan government to provide security and could push them to send many more troops. Later this hour, the Afghanistan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, who's joining us from Afghanistan, will be our guest. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. And our first guest actually is in Russia right now, Professor Goodyear. Thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you on Abraham Lincoln's birthday.
I know. It's a special day. I wish we were in Springfield, don't you?
Really, I do.
I know.
I just got done reading Team of Rivals, which President Obama was reading as he was deciding how to put together his cabinet. And so I feel kind of close to Honest Abe today.
Yes, I do too. I always feel close to Honest Abe for some reason. I always do. What are you doing in Russia?
Well, we have, it's not Afghanistan related, by the way. We have a sister university here with whom we're doing a project that combines language and computers to make language teachers better language teachers. So, and it's something that our units in University of Nebraska at Omaha are very pleased to work with the People's Friendship University of Russia in this process. So we have a grant from the U.S. Department of Education to help us to do that.
Wonderful. Great. Well, let's talk about what you would like to hear Robert Gates say will be our strategy for the next year or beyond in Afghanistan. I understand he's going to be announcing something in the next couple of days. Where's the Obama administration going in this country?
Well, I hope that what our government will decide to do is to take a very, very strong look at how to reassess and redirect our policy. We spent an awful lot of time and cobbling together an Afghan government after the Taliban were driven out of Afghanistan. And the people we put together were many of them, of course, very well-meaning, but none of them had the opportunity to have learned management through on-the-job training. And unfortunately, after we put together the government there, we did not take a real hands-on approach to helping those people who, you have to remember, had just spent the better part of a decade in a civil war fighting each other. And we needed to work with them in a kind of a Marshall Plan approach. But instead, we did an outsourcing kind of thing by using a donor conference approach, which had a multiple of participants and nations involved, none of whom really were subscribing to a general approach that was highly disciplined, highly organized, highly coordinated. And we wound up then with many different approaches with different agendas and each nation with a different accountability. And this is the way it's proceeded for the last 7 years. There have been some things that have been done that are very good and have helped Afghanistan, but in the main, the average Joe Afghan does not, I think, really feel that his and his family's lives have improved in terms of quality of security, in terms of quality of opportunity.
Mm.
And because of that, you know, we just had really kind of 7 years of unfortunate approach with inappropriate technology, using for-profit contract hires, and we've not taken the kind of leadership that I think the Afghans expected of us. And so we've looked bad, and those that we are working with have looked bad, people like Hamid Karzai and others. You know, that's not to say that, you know, that people in Afghanistan are without blame, but quite frankly, they never had enough resources with the brain drain they had and the destruction of their infrastructure to do this on their own. And then when we came there, we unfortunately started looking to Iraq almost immediately and didn't really focus on what should be done in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Robert,
so I hope that that's what the Obama, you know, administration now is going to do and not pass the buck. This is not a, you know, a problem that should be, you know, blamed solely on Afghans. We've got to admit our own failure there in not providing enough security and not having appropriate technology and programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far we've just heard 30,000 more troops. Is that enough troops? Would they serve a military role mostly? Is that the way we want to go or not?
Well, I think the most important thing we need to do immediately is increase the number of troops. I can't tell you if that's going to be enough or if it's even too much or whatever, because it's very hard, you know, to be able to predict that or look at that in the future. But it certainly will help to improve the security situation. And if it depends very much on where they're placed. And if they're placed in a situation where they're going to be able to interdict the movement of peoples back and forth across the Afghan-Pakistani border, that would be a very important contribution. Also, if they're going to be placed in other parts of Afghanistan where there is a serious security problems, that would be important as well. Now, as you just opened the program with, you know, there are serious security problems also in Kabul, and at least there was, you know, in the last couple of days. But again, a lot of that is the movement of peoples, and that's what has to be, you know, that's our first plan. I think, you know, President Obama campaigned on the idea, the platform that we needed to focus on Afghanistan, not on Iraq, and that we needed to recognize that Afghanistan was the security issue that was most important to us. And so I hope that that will be the approach. In terms of, in addition to that, we need to do appropriate technology development programming with highly coordinated and efficient coordinating. We have farmed out too much of it to a kind of hodgepodge group under the loose umbrella of the United Nations, and that just has not worked. And as a result, the Afghans keep getting mixed signals about how to do things, and they, we again have to remember, don't have a lot of management, managerial experience, and what they see in terms of the international community is a very uncoordinated example. And so you've got a lot of money sitting in Kabul because of the lack of security that creates potential for corruption. And it, you know, makes a kind of a real seedbed for lack of success.
Gates also said in the last couple days, he reminded us that the Soviet Union failed in Afghanistan in the 1980s, even with 120,000 troops. It's not for nothing, he said, that Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires. Can you elaborate on that?
You know, I that really bothers me to hear that, because it's true. It is the graveyard of empires that seek to, you know, occupy it. The British lost three times, and the Russians, the Soviet Union lost once, trying to do that. And but we have to remember that they came in with the purpose of occupying. They were not welcome. They were not coming in with good intent. We came into Afghanistan to help drive out the terrorists, the militant Muslims who had hijacked Afghanistan, and the Afghans were pleased to have that happen. The Afghans have never had a bad kind of feeling about America or Americans. In fact, they have always held Americans in high regard. And it's inappropriate to compare Afghanistan's experience with the Soviet Union and the current American situation, other than to understand that if we don't do it right, then we wind up committing some of the mistakes tactically, like bombing parts of Afghanistan and trying to get at the terrorists. So there's no such thing as a smart bomb, no matter what they say. In order to do it appropriately, you've got to have on-the-ground intelligence, and you have to go after terrorists on the ground. And we haven't had enough troops to do that. So that's one thing we can learn from them. But the other thing that's very important is that our biggest asset that we're at risk in squandering in the struggle against militant Islam and the globalization of terrorism has been the Afghans. They want us there. And we're losing them, as I said earlier. We're losing average Joe Afghan because of the failed policies that were used during the last 7 years. And that's a tragedy for us, even more so than for the Afghans.
And when you say we're losing them to the Taliban? We're losing them to, where are we losing them to?
We're not really losing them to the Taliban. We're losing their confidence. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that they pull back, and because they have to protect themselves. And if the Taliban are coming in and threatening them, threatening their families because their daughters are going to school, or threatening them because they're going to work on a project that involves international forces or developed assistance workers, they're not engaged with us, and we need them to be engaged, and we need them to profit from this engagement. And many of them just don't see where that's coming, because a lot of the contracts that we have from America spend more money on Americans. Right now, rent is almost equal in Afghanistan per square foot in Kabul to, places in Manhattan. And this is one of the poorest countries in the world. And we're there in too great a numbers, and we're spending too many dollars on inappropriate technology projects, and we just need to reassess and do it right. We need to ensure that the projects that we're utilizing are employing local hire Afghans, not expatriates, who have to wind up sitting in Kabul because they can't get out because of the lack of security.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We'll take them in just a moment. Joining us this first half hour is Professor Thomas Goodyear, Dean of International Studies, Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, joining us by phone from Russia this morning. Later this hour, the Afghanistan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now, and let's start with John from Madison. Hi, John.
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things that the public has to keep in mind is what is our real goal in Afghanistan, and I would assert it's to turn it into a compliant client state like we have in Iraq, and I'm sure they're going to use the Petraeus model to buy off the opposition, set up a strong, nationalized, American-trained internal military, rebuild, as your speakers indicated, lay off on the air war because that kills a lot of civilians, both in Afghanistan and Pakistan. But the central issue to me is to what extent should we begin immediate negotiations with the Taliban? The Taliban isn't al-Qaeda. They provided a staging area for al-Qaeda, but they're totally separate. Karzai wants this. We worked with people absolutely as abhorrent to the Americans mind as the Taliban. In Germany, after World War II, at least between 3 and 5% of the people that were in the bureaucracy were ex-Nazis because they were opposed to the communists. One of the biggest mistakes Bremer made was not to employ the Ba'athists, so I'm suggesting we immediately start negotiations with the Taliban.
Professor Goodyear.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, very informed question and also an interesting one. But one of the things, John, we need to remember about the Taliban is that they're, and I think you're implying this, that they're not monolithic. There are a variety of different kinds of groups who we, who are called in the media, you know, the Taliban, and even by our government. And some of them are connected with the Al-Qaeda network. Some of them are connected with Mullah Muhammad Omar's network, which can work together and also can be very independent from each other. And then there are others who are indigenous Afghans who are just concerned that, as Gilzai Pashtuns perhaps, that they're not going to be included in the future development of their country. So it's particularly that latter group that that the Karzai government wishes to work with and needs to work with, because this is the group of Afghans who inhabit that area along the Pakistani border. So we need, I think, to work in ways, particularly in the PRTs, these pre-provincial reconstruction team groups in the various provinces along that eastern border of Afghanistan with Pakistan, to advance the development process. If we do that, then people in those areas will understand that their future and their opportunities for the future lie with the development that's going to be coming from the central government of Afghanistan in concert with the the support of the United States and others who are contributing to that. And that's the best way to deal with that. And I think Admiral Mullen has been the most cogent in his analysis, saying that the most important thing we need to do is to link our security, resources, increasing those at the same time that we work to improve the development processes. And, you know, the Afghans are going to have to sort out their own politics. And but they're not able to do that if there's not enough security. And so, again, what happens is without that security, without the appropriate development, we all are looking bad. The Afghan central government, the U.S., and others are working with us.
Well, what about the training they may need, or maybe they already have it and they can't exercise it, to be in charge of their own reconstruction? Can they do that at this point? Are they up and running, ready to go?
Well, they're not up and running, and unfortunately, we've kind of lost 7 years in trying to get them up and running, and that's because we just have not had a kind of a school for management as part of the whole reconstruction process. Again, we've got to remember that Afghanistan has gone through more than 30 years of constant war and destruction. There's been an incredible number of people killed and others wounded and driven from the country. So the brain drain has been tremendous. And there's a lot of hostile feelings yet remaining from some of the ethnic, fighting that went on during this period after the Soviets left. And so it's kind of hard to think that they're all going to just come together and say, okay, it's all behind us now, let's make it work. And so they needed a kind of technocratic model and real guidance, and that can be done without making a nation or a minister or an office a client. It can make them partner and efforts that are important for both countries. And this is not what we did, and so as a result, we've kind of lost the and squandered our assets there and our opportunities. So I think it's still open, mainly because the vast majority of the Afghans know that their future is dependent upon us doing right with them, programming for the future. And so I still think the window is open there. I particularly think we have an opportunity now with the new administration to say, you know, okay, guys, we're here with the new plan. And the last group, you know, tried their way. It didn't really work very well. We don't have to go into the recriminatory, you know, kind of conversation there. But just let's try and do it right this mm-hmm. time. And I think that's possible because let me tell you, I mean, I go back and forth to Afghan a lot, and those people, you know, they're suffering. And you know, if they think they have a shot at any kind of decent future, they're gonna you know, leap to grab it.
Sure. Thanks, John, for the call. Jackie from Drummond. Hi.
Well, yeah, this is so timely. Excuse me. About a year ago, I read an article by Sebastian Younger, the war correspondent, who said we cannot win militarily, you know, in Afghanistan. So a mere citizen like me wrote a letter to the editor, you know, covering these points, you know, as evidenced by Britain and Russia. And fast forward to Three Cups of Tea, Greg Mortensen, who has defied mm-hmm. all odds and fatwas by going into Pakistan and Afghanistan, and we're having his mom come to northern Wisconsin to talk. And talking to her off the cuff, she said Afghanistan is not a country unto itself. It's, you know, tribal, and that there's no way militarily you can get in there. You have to win their trust. You have to work with all the groups, and you have to do what Greg Mortensen is doing. And so I think he's gotten world acclaim, and I think we need to bring in NGOs in construction versus the military. And,
okay, Jackie, your phone is real faint, so let's go with that.
But I think I got it.
Yes, I think you did,
and I know what she's referring to with Sebastian Younger's you know, article, and also Greg Mortensen's doing good work, and he's the kind of NGO that Afghanistan needs. There are a lot. There are too many NGOs in Afghanistan. It's kind of overrun with NGOs. Many of them, they only have marginal resources, and so they kind of clutter up the landscape. But the important thing that Jackie was pointing out, I think, was that we need to work with the local higher Afghans with a technology that they are able to manage themselves. Leapfrogging is not the way to try and change things in Afghanistan. That brings in types of technologies that the Afghans don't fully understand yet how to manage for their own advantage. And so that creates mismanagement, also corruption. And we really need to pull back on the number of expatriates who are, many of whom are making up to $500,000 a year in salary and benefits. When Afghans, you know, make nowhere near that, they're lucky if they can pull in $1,000 a year or something of this nature. So with the inflation that provides, the fact that most of the best Afghans are hired by contractors, means that they're not working for the Afghan ministries or Afghan offices. We're not really helping the Afghans develop themselves and set themselves up for the future. It's better if we do it right, even if it's going to be slower, because if we're training Afghans in the process, rather than importing workers from Pakistan or India or elsewhere from, you know, the West, then the Afghans are going to, you know, be able to mark themselves the progress that they are participating in.
Thanks for the call. One more phone call, and then we're just going to stay on topic but change our guest. Jake from Menasha. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I just want to make a quick comment, and then I'll listen for the response off the air. My belief is this new emphasis by the Obama administration on Afghanistan is nothing but a continuation of the Iraqi war, and it'll essentially be ran out of the new $1 trillion embassy out of Baghdad that's been built in Baghdad, and that it will fail, the Obama administration will fail, just as all of our American foreign policy in the Middle East has failed over the last decades. Your comment, please.
Okay, well, I don't agree with that. I agree with parts of what you've said, that we've made major mistakes, of course, in the Iraq situation. I don't see Afghanistan and Iraq either with having come to be a part of our policy from different sources. The sources that attacked us on 9/11 really did come from training in Afghanistan, though they were not Afghan. Unlike Iraq, and we should have spent our time right after 9/11, focusing on making sure that that kind of problem would not resurface again in Afghanistan. We didn't do that. We went to Iraq, and that messed up our whole approach in Afghanistan. So I think that, you know, the situation is in Afghanistan, we really haven't tried what needs to be done there. I have confidence, really, and let's say confidence and hope both, that the Obama administration is going to take a look at this and understand that this is not a parallel situation to Iraq. It needs its own Afghan solution. And, you know, we haven't, you know, put that together. One good example of how other things are, you know, failed is that people keep talking about the opium poppy problems. And a lot of people from the West say, well, we need to better, you know, the Afghans need to eliminate that kind of thing. When the Afghans are confronted with the fact that Americans, the British, the Canadians, and others who are involved with them in that particular policy each have a different approach. So how, you know, can the Afghans get a sense of how they might do it, working with any one of those in a concerted effort? And this is, again, you know, maybe now the current administration is going to find a way through better diplomatic approaches to work with our allies and the Afghans to address this particularly, you know, major problem that you know, affects all of us, including the Afghans and the stability of Afghan society.
Are they asking for your advice and counsel, Professor Goodyear?
Well, it's good to be with you. Thank you for,
okay,
you know, calling me all the way here in Moscow on Abraham Lincoln's Day. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about something which is so important to us, the United States of America, and to the Afghan people.
Right.
Happy,
thank you.
Lincoln Day.
Happy Lincoln Day to you, and thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful guest, Professor Thomas Goodyear, Dean of International Studies and Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. We thank him for joining us by phone from Moscow, Russia today. We're going to continue talking about Afghanistan, and we have a different guest joining us from Afghanistan, actually. He's an Afghan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and we're going to be looking at the recent round of violence he wrote yesterday on Gopal about what happened in Kabul yesterday with insurgents attacking three government offices. And there were 26 people killed, 60 people wounded. And there have also been problems, high-profile assaults. In January, as you know, a car bomb detonated near the German embassy, killing civilians and U.S. soldiers. Last July, a car bomb targeted the Indian embassy, killing at least 50 people. Gunmen tried to assassinate Hamid Karzai last spring, stormed a luxury hotel early last year, and the insurgents were able to circumvent rather tight security. So we are going to be talking with Anand about the increase in violence and talk from the new administration that we are going to look at an increase in troops, some 30,000 more troops, and that should be announced in the next couple days. We're welcoming your phone calls, too, as we always do. We're just tracking down our next guest, and here's how you reach us. A lot of interest in this subject, which is good. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. And we do have Anand Gopal, Afghanistan correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, with us right now. Hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the violence that you reported on in Kabul yesterday. It was another instance of insurgents being able to circumvent tight security. How were they able to do this, and are you seeing an increase in this kind of attack?
You know, the capital city, Kabul, is surrounded by police checkpoints and army checkpoints, and yet the insurgents are still able to sneak in large amounts of ammunition and explosives and strike at the heart of the city, right in the crowded downtown area. And it's still an open question on how they're able to infiltrate the city this way. They most likely have people who are supporting them on the inside of the city, as well as there may be corrupt security forces. And there's been an increase in these sorts of attacks over the last year. We've seen Every couple of months or so, some sort of major attack. There was a car bombing against the Indian embassy in the summer. There was an assassination attempt against Karzai. There's been a string of other suicide bombings. So we're definitely seeing an increase in this sort of thing.
Who are these insurgents, Anand?
Well, broadly speaking, they're the Taliban. Although they're different factions of the Taliban. A lot of analysts suspect that yesterday's attacks were authored by a group called the Haqqani Network. This is a group that has ties to Al-Qaeda, and this is one of the more extremist insurgent groups here. They're based out of Pakistan, and they've also been behind many of these sort of spectacular attacks. And one of the hallmarks of Haqqani attacks is that they involve many different elements and are very coordinated and have a high degree of planning, which is what we saw yesterday. There was up to eight attackers, and there's three different sites that are attacked simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. You have written in today's edition, actually, of The Monitor, that incidents like what you witnessed yesterday in Kabul will certainly affect the debate in Washington. People have told you that. How will it affect the debate?
Well, there's been a growing sense that the security has been deteriorating in Afghanistan, and we've seen reports coming out of U.S. government that have been stating this repeatedly. And the real question for policymakers in Washington is whether they can rely upon the Afghan government to be able to provide security. And as I mentioned before, Kabul is probably the most heavily fortified area in Afghanistan. And if insurgents are able to strike at the heart of a city like this, despite the high level of security, it really undermines the confidence in Washington of their Afghan partners and undermines their confidence in the Afghan government's ability to be able to provide security and keep attacks to a minimum.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, from looking at what's going on the ground there, what do you think would be most helpful to allow Afghanistan to reorganize, to have a resurgence, to allow people to be able to go to school and not worry about their own safety, et cetera? What do we need to do?
Well, the Afghan government's been mired in corruption, and this is something that the Americans have said repeatedly that it's had this problem. But at the same time, a lot of the Western intervention within Afghanistan has also been affected by corruption. And I'm talking about, for example, the whole process of reconstruction. For example, there's contracts that are given to specific private companies, which are sometimes no-bid contracts, and these contracts are then subcontracted out to other Afghan companies, and there's no oversight over the process, and there's very little accountability. And in the process, millions of dollars gets wasted, and it also creates a lot of ill will with Afghans, because Afghans have seen the West pour in a lot of money over the last 7 years, but they haven't seen the effects of that money. And still, much of the country is in a state of disrepair, and Afghanistan is still the third or fourth poorest country in the world, which is not very different from the position it was 7 years ago when the U.S. first came.
Mm-hmm. So the emphasis so far has been on military aspect here? There hasn't been a lot of training for rebuilding infrastructure, et cetera?
There hasn't been a lot of accountability and transparency in the reconstruction process. There's been cases in which, for example, I'll give you an example, the American government contracted out a project to rebuild to build a well in a village, and that company then contracted out to a different company, which then went and took a picture of any old well somewhere and just showed it to the original contracting company and passed it off as, "This is our project." And there's no way of tracking this, and there's this money that's gone down the tubes. And this is something that's happened across the board.
Let's go back to phone calls for you. Frank from Madison is our next caller. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Thanks for two very cogent guests. I'd like to ask two questions, and perhaps I'm posing something, but still with the question. One, the situation with NATO in Afghanistan is that the Allies find themselves in a situation which they didn't actually sign on for. They went in there essentially with a reconstruction mission with a minor military component, and at least for the British and the Canadians and the Dutch, they find themselves in a full-scale war where attempts at reconstruction are confused with the fact that they're a belligerent. And, of course, the Germans signed up only for reconstruction. Now, the United States wants to escalate and be extremely aggressive militarily. which antagonizes the local population. And the other NATO countries are extremely uneasy about that. And American doctrine and practice leads to incredible amount of collateral death. And so an American escalation is ominous. The other thing that upsets the NATO allies is that the United States is conflating anti-Taliban activities with an anti-drug campaign, which will further antagonize the general population. And it's those drug lords who were the primary allies of the United States after 9/11. So how is the United States going to square that particular circle unless it reengages with reconstruction as the primary mission and security as vital but secondary? And the second question is, surely dealing with Afghanistan is a subset of dealing with Pakistan.
Mm.
So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for your questions. Anand?
I think your callers make some excellent points there. First off, with the issue of NATO and the United States, one thing that a lot of people don't know is that right now there are sections of the American Army that operates under a different set of operating procedures than the NATO Army. And, for example, that's rules of engagement. So there's special forces that don't fall under the standard operating guidelines of the rest of the forces that exist in Afghanistan. And these are the forces that have often been behind the deeply unpopular house raids. And these are raids which, you know, soldiers will go into Afghan homes in the middle of the night and haul people off and it's for questioning. And it's done, this sort of practice has done a lot to turn people against the Americans. And one associated tragedy with that is that Afghans in most the rural areas don't differentiate or distinguish between Americans or Canadians or British. To them, they all seem like foreigners.
Oh.
And so if an American does something in one district, it'll affect how the Canadians or the British are able to operate in the district. And certainly when NATO first came here, their mission was to help reconstruct. But there's been a lot of failures in the reconstruction process, as I've mentioned before. And this has partly led to the growth of people who are a layer of rural population that's been dissatisfied with the international community and the Afghan government. And that sort of creates a space for the Taliban to come in and sort of grow. So then with that happening, then the NATO is been forced to take more of a counterinsurgency role, which is not what they signed up for. So I think the solution here would be to try to turn back the clock and look at the original issues which are causing the rise of the Taliban, and that's one is weak governance, and two is corruption, and three is the lack of development. And those things need to be addressed by the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And the second issue of the poppy trade is very important because on the one hand, the call is right that a lot of American allies are involved in the drug trade, and by that I mean people in the Afghan government, and very powerful people in the Afghan government. And secondly, a lot of poor rural farmers are growing poppies as their only means of subsistence. And what happens is when international forces or the Afghan government goes in and tries to eradicate these poppies, these villagers turn to the Taliban for protection. So there's been a lot of cases where these poor farmers have become Taliban adherents or even Taliban members themselves because of this poppy eradication policy.
Hmm. And do you think that the work with the poppies, it goes beyond the Afghan government, that there's also perhaps some interest in the money that can be gained from this from other governments in the world who are supposed to be helping with reconstruction and protection?
Well, we hear whispers about that sort of thing. Of course, one of the jokes that Afghans always say is we had no poppy problem until the British showed up in Helmand. Of course, there's no definitive links or anything that so I wouldn't want to say anything too specifically, but they are whispers about this.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there are contradictions in the policy because if the very close allies, very close allies of the Americans and the British are profiting from the drug trade, that makes things very hairy.
Yeah. More phone calls in just one moment. Joining us by phone from Afghanistan, Anand Gopal. He is an Afghan reporter for the Christian Science Monitor and has a piece online today, Coordinated Kabul Assault Shows Taliban Strength. He has an extensive article on yesterday's insurgents attacking three government offices in a heavily fortified area a day before U.S. Envoy Holbrooke's visit, and that visit, of course, today. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, this story made the New York Times yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but if you live in this area, you no doubt are familiar with the story of the 18-year-old student from Eisenhower High School in New Berlin, Wisconsin, who is accused of posing as a girl on Facebook, tricking 31 of his classmates, male classmates, to sending him naked pictures of themselves and then blackmailing them for sex acts. Well, it raises a number of questions. What's going on with computers? How could so many young men send photos of themselves naked on the internet? What's going on with that? And so we will be speaking with a technology analyst for CBS News and a professor of psychiatry who will help us navigate through the online world and the world of the teenage mind. So that's coming up. Okay, back to phone calls. Mike is next from Appleton. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. You know, due to the constraints of time, I'm going to just lay out in very simplistic terms what I think could probably be a solution, let's say, in Afghanistan. And it's a question of hearts and minds. We have to win hearts and minds. So the instant you put boots on the ground, you have the population against you because they consider you to be an invader, an occupier, et cetera. And, you know, military action has always collateral damage. So it would seem to me that the solution is you have to have security in order to get economic stability, in order to have political stability. So how do you get that security? You don't do it with boots on the ground. You put the average Taliban fighter on the payroll. And, you know, your previous guest said, you know, perhaps a Taliban guy, you know, maybe he makes $1,000 a year. Well, let's pay him $250 a month, and he's, you know, he's on our side. And start from there.
Hmm. Anand, what do you think?
Well, this has actually been a line of thinking with the Afghan government as well. There's been a program over the last couple of years that's tried to engage some of these fighters on the ground and give them salaries and bring them into the fold. And this effort's been amplified recently with a U.S.-sponsored program, which is called the Public Protection Force, which is to get local tribesmen and possibly people who may have some affinity to the Taliban, to get them to join a local sort of tribal militia force and pay them in a way that's somewhat similar to what happened in Iraq. Now, of course, there's a danger with all this because Afghanistan is a country that's been mired in over 30 years of war and civil war. And it's been a country that's had plenty of non-state actors.
Oops, are you there? Hello? I think we lost our phone line to Afghanistan, so we will try and reach him again and get a end to that sentence and maybe another sentence. We are speaking about Afghanistan this hour of the program. More violence. Yesterday, our guest wrote about the insurgent attacks yesterday in Kabul. Three government offices attacked on Wednesday. 26 people killed, 60 people wounded. And he says that it was one of the most complex and daring to take place in the capital of Afghanistan since 2001. So we're looking at a number of issues this hour. That attack, the recent increase in the number of attacks. Today, Richard Holbrooke will be in Afghanistan. We're talking about that and discussion that within the next couple days we'll be getting a clearer look at what the administration plans to do in Afghanistan, whether or not we're sending more troops. Robert Gage is to make this announcement fairly soon and asking you, what do you think about what we need to be doing in Afghanistan to lessen the violence, to lessen the attraction of the Taliban, etc. So our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. And we're just trying to connect once again. I guess sometimes a phone call can be tricky when you're calling Afghanistan. We do have him back on the line. So let's just go to another phone call. Mike, thanks very much for your call. And let us go to Chakri, is it, from Waukesha? Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes, I thank you for the show, and I have a different question for the new guest. I respect a lot the New Science Monitor. Are we really welcome over there? I mean, does it, if we talk to the job plumber in Afghanistan, are we really welcome? If we got rid of Al Qaeda, why don't we just now get out of there and come back home? You know, after all, there are so many corrupt places in the world. So why do you have to sustain all these casualties and all these deaths? And now we got rid of the Al Qaeda who did 9/11. Just go back home, and that's it.
Okay, thank you for the call. What about that, Anand? Let's just go back home.
Well, you know, when you talk to people in the cities, in the urban areas, you get a sense that people feel that we are the lesser of two evils, and they're very unhappy with us. They're very unhappy with the way the international community has acted here, but they say, well, okay, at least you're not the Taliban. But if you go into the rural areas, which is most of Afghanistan, the poor villages, We're not welcome there, and we were at one point. Back in 2001 and 2002, most of the country welcomed us in Iran, and people feel in these areas that we've had 7 or 8 years to prove ourselves, and unfortunately they feel that the international community has failed. And you have to remember, the Americans came to Afghanistan and promised them the world. You know, they promised them security and jobs and reconstruction and a transparent and accountable government. And yeah, a lot of Afghans feel that we haven't delivered on any of those counts. At the same time, the Taliban hasn't promised very much to people. They've promised a very basic and simple program of providing law and order, going in and cleaning up criminals and bringing in Sharia law. And so they haven't promised a lot, but because of that, they've been able to deliver for the most part. And so they've grown in popularity. And now it's come to the point where a growing number of people want the troops to leave right now. I think there was recently a poll with BBC that something like only 30 or 35% of Afghans are happy with the American actions in Afghanistan.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the call. Mark is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen. I wanted to talk about the non-military aid that's being used in Afghanistan, and this directly affects the security there. And it's pretty clear that Afghanistan has been in free fall for quite some time, but I think the listening audience, and I do have a question here, but the listening audience, first of all, needs to know that 85% of non-military aid winds up back in the pockets of the U.S. service corporations tasked to build schools, infrastructure, roads, bridges, electrical, commercial development, and security. And only 15% of U.S. taxpayer monies actually produce a physical example of positive social aid that meets a social need. Now, I'm looking, here's my question, I'm looking for a number, and please don't tell me you don't know what it is, but what number are we talking about in non-military aid? And I'd be happy to stand in line if there was a discussion that wanted to be had.
What about non-military aid?
I'm sorry, a number for non-military aid in what respect?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Anand? I couldn't hear you.
Okay, your caller asked for a number associated with non-military aid, is that right?
Yes.
I don't know, the overall dollar number, it's been close to in the hundreds of millions of dollars every year. One of the problems here is that there's a number which is the pledged aid. So every couple of years, various governments get together and pledge hundreds of millions of dollars in aid. And I think the most recent figure is around $260 million. Hmm. But that's a far cry from the aid that actually gets delivered. And that's much harder to quantify. As you call it, mentioned 85% of some forms of aid end up right back in U.S. coffers.
Mm-hmm.
But also, of aid that comes from NGO organizations, I think 40 cents out of every dollar actually reaches Afghanistan, and 60 cents is eaten up by administrative costs and lifestyles of foreign workers here. If you go to sections of Kabul where the foreigners live, it's completely different from the rest of the city, and they're living in extreme wealth, and it's something that really great at Afghans.
Yeah, understandably. Sometimes you wonder, things seem relatively simple. How can you not get that right? Don't you think about what you're doing it? Not get that one right. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope we can team up with you again. I enjoy and appreciate your reporting. Thank you, Anand. Our guest joining us by phone from Afghanistan today, Anand Gopal, and he has a piece in the Christian Science Monitor online now, which concerns what happened yesterday, the terrible attacks in Kabul on government offices and the increased violence in Afghanistan. We thank him for his time. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this interesting hour. Thanks also to Professor Thomas Goodyear, Dean of International Studies, Director of the Center for Afghanistan Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Rob Schroeder, our on-air producer, here in our new studios in Milwaukee. We thank Rob. And thanks, everybody, for your calls. We'll have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we will return with another hour of conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.